Wow. Wow. So that's where we will end it this evening. Thank you for making Monday a very, very good beginning of our week. I'm not entirely certain. We may have a local meeting tomorrow evening of our group that's continuing to press against this god-awful mountaintop removal nightmare near here. If so, I'll do an hour and maybe go to the meeting and try to come back and do another hour. But at least, at the very least, I should be doing an hour tomorrow evening. It is now officially the 15th day of June. We are halfway through June, and July is looking grimmer by the moment. You know, it's a terrible thing when you sit around and you think about what you'll lose. When I sit around and think about what I will lose if the horn goes dark. Not hearing from Albert, not hearing from Alan or Juanita. Not hearing from Preston or Kate or any of the many myriad people who have made my life so much better. No more emails. No more chat room. And that just shakes me to my core. And selfishly, it does so for me. But I know, based on what I hear from you, that it shakes you as well. Thank you to folks who did step up in the last couple of days as you were able. We are trying like crazy and will not give up until this whole thing gets unplugged. But it's the 15th of June, and we are nowhere near where we ought to be on the 15th of June. We'll get through June. July's looking mighty dodgy. If you're able and you can help, I say thanks. Thanks to also Ben Birch, John Fox, and Peter Godbold, chat room moderators Lottie and Sue, News Ninjas Gene and Susan, and Blogger Texas Betsy. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Before we proceed, get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Okay. How many of you can imagine what my face looks like right now? What shade of red? Here we play the introduction about throwing the third switch, and we forgot to throw it today. So here I was talking to myself for a couple of minutes until somebody sent me an email saying, "Hey, stupid, are you up and running?" Man, oh man, I'll tell you. Thanks for joining us here today on the Guy James Show. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Good to be with you on this Tuesday. We are coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida, where it's hot and hazy today. It's hot a lot of places around the country. But summer is here, and glad of it. I don't know if is summer officially here yet. I'm not sure when. I'm really bad about dates. I really am. I remember my birthday, a few of my loved ones' birthdays, July the 4th, Christmas Day. That's about it. Guy Fawkes Day. But other than that, that's about it. I can't remember many more dates than that. I don't know why. I'm a numbers guy. I'm good with numbers, but I can't remember specific dates so very well. December 7th, 2002. That's when we started the show, by the way. December 7th, 2002, coming up on 8 years. My God, where does the time go? Anyway, we've got a couple of good guests for you this afternoon. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, we have Youssef Mouniar from the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. We're going to talk about Netanyahu's speech that he gave. I didn't think much of it on Sunday. And then coming up at the bottom, or the second hour after, actually, Dr. Carol Paris is going to, she's for the Physicians for Healthcare. She's going to join us from Washington, D.C., coming up, or Maryland, I think. Somewhere around the periphery there of Washington, D.C. Yeah, going to join us in the second hour of the program. So we have much to talk about today. We may even join a press conference a little later on. I'm not positive about that yet. I haven't made a decision on that yet. I did want to mention right off today that nowhere are you safe from these hate crimes, these terrible hate crimes that are taking place today, and we know where many of them, if not most of them, are coming from. We had a lady in Naples, Florida, not so very far from where I'm sitting right now, wrote a Sunday story about the celebration of parents, families, and friends of lesbian and gays. And she awoke this morning to swastikas painted on her garage, accompanied by copies of the article. Collier County, Florida deputies are investigating the hate crime at Ruth Dorman's home. Dorman submitted a story that was published in the Naples Daily News about the second annual interfaith convocation for the families and friends of lesbians and gays that was held at the Unity Church of Naples. And so she gets swastikas painted on her garage with accompanying copies of her article. Spreading, isn't it? It's spreading. More and more every day, we're hearing about unbridled hatred in this country. I don't know what can be done about it. It seems to be out of control. Oh, I know what could be done about it, but it wouldn't be legal. We have people right now who are definitely in a theater yelling fire. We hear it every day on our airwaves and networks. And it doesn't seem to be much we can do about it. I'm sad about that. Well, just wanted to let you know that it struck near where I live as well. And hatred and violence is alive and well in this country. Many places, not just here, not just in Washington. not just in Pittsburgh, not just in Kansas City, but all over this country. And it's a shame. It's a dirty shame. I did want to mention, while we have time here before we get to the first interviewee today, Dick Cheney. There's a big controversy, as you well know, going on about Dick Cheney, or the Dick, as I prefer to call him. And now we find out he was all for letting these articles come out, these notes from the CIA, because he figured they never would. You can bet your bottom dollar Dick Cheney thought these CIA notes would never come out. Now it turns out that things are coming out, and self-proclaimed September 11th mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told U.S. military officials that he had lied to the CIA after being abused, according to the documents made public Monday. The claim is likely to intensify the debate over whether harsh interrogation techniques generated accurate information. And to quote Mohammed, Sheikh Mohammed, he said, and let me quote him, "I make up stories," he described in broken English. An interrogation probably administered by the CIA concerning the whereabouts of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. "Where is he? I don't know. Then he tortured me," Mohammed said of his interrogator. "Then I said, yes, he is in this area." Mohammed also appeared to say that he had figured people he did not know as being Al-Qaeda members in order to avoid abusive treatment. He'd fingered people he didn't know. So, Dick Cheney swore that when things came out that it would vindicate him, most especially about whether or not torture works. We've heard from so many experts that it is at best unreliable as far as getting truth. Oh, yes, you can get people to confess to just about anything. And so the information we got from these torture techniques turns out to be worthless. When our beloved Dick Cheney told us, oh my God, we just got so much great information, it saved many lives. And I think we know by now, we should know by now, that believing a single word coming out of the mouth of one Richard Cheney is a grave mistake. Can't now, nor could you ever believe anything the man said. He is a ruthless, conniving, no good bastard. And I hate to put it in those kind of terms, but he's one of a handful of people that I would say that about. He only cared about himself. He is a sociopath in the truest sense of the word. Nothing else you can say about Dick Cheney. In fact, that's probably the best thing I could say about Dick Cheney. That's a sad testament about somebody. Also wanted to mention, in case you haven't seen it, did you know that the good folks over at Cafe Press are now printing T-shirts that Scott Roeder is an American hero? Mm-hmm. They're having a good time over at Cafe Press. Here's some of the Mad Max designs, if you could see them. One of them is Scott Roeder's an American hero. And another one is showing a high-powered rifle signaling the impeachment of Barack Obama holds a similar meaning. So once again, the hate is rampant here in this country, absolutely rampant. And I got this from a friend. The good news, Catherine Harris. You all remember beautiful Catherine. Star of the second election in Florida, probably the biggest customer of cosmetics in the country. Start of the 2000 election in Florida, she's moved past her overwhelming defeat in the 2006 Senate race to find paying work. Doing what? Why, she's selling her services. Now get this, and please stifle your laughter. She's selling her services as an election monitor to foreign countries. Yes. She's selling her services as an election monitor. I'll give you a minute to recover from that image about her and crack up at the idea of Catherine Harris, guarantor of fair and reliable election. And you know, as the friend put it, for a few dollars more, but Michael Vick will carry for your dogs, and the town drunk will drive you home from the bar, and Sarah Palin will proofread your doctoral thesis. Catherine Harris is far from the first politician to do this. Washed up politicos of interest groups to market their lack of shame. For example, the U.S. Association of Former Members of Congress proudly advertises the availability of its members as election monitors. And here's one story about this that I thought was particularly interesting. Cameroon dictator Paul Biya availed himself of the services in 2004, hiring former House members Michael Forbes, Democrat of New York, Webb Franklin, Republican of Mississippi, Ronnie Shows, Democrat of Mississippi, Andrew McGuire, Democrat of New Jersey, Joe Wyatt, Democrat of Texas, and Dick Schultz, Democrat of Pennsylvania, to lend legitimacy to his sham reelection. They obliged by breathlessly assuring the world that Mr. Biya won fair and square, while a not-for-profit Commonwealth delegation led by former Canadian Prime Minister Joe Clark noted that the Americans were too busy being wined, dined, and lavishly entertained by Biya to actually monitor the registration of voters or observe more than a handful of polling places in what Clark called a deeply flawed election. Thus, six congressmen sold their reputation to legitimize the regime of what David Walenchinsky notes is one of the most corrupt, brutal regimes on the planet. Now, we expect people like Catherine Harris to sell themselves to the highest bidder and willingly bend over for strongmen of exceedingly dubious character. That's why we're not shocked to hear Harris say that Iran's sham elections were free and fair. And she castigated the opposition with, "This is just sour grapes. The time has now come to move on." Chalk up just another example of free markets failing. That the transition of election monitoring from moral duty to marketable commodity has the predictable consequences in terms of quality and accuracy. Catherine Harris says the election in Iran were legal, honest, and open, and accurate. Catherine Harris. Oh, Catherine. Dear Catherine. And, of course, you've heard much about the Minutemen. I've always believed that this was just a matter of time before something like this was happening. This Shauna Ford, leader of the Minutemen American Defense group called MAD. She's a graduate of a San Diego terrorist camp, vigilante. She's been arrested along with two other terrorist Border Patrol volunteer group members for having shot up a Hispanic family in their own home, leaving a father and his 9-year-old daughter dead. And one of the other vigilantes is also a product of a Minuteman training camp. They were there to shoot the place up and steal these people's money. I believe they thought they were drug dealers, and maybe they were drug dealers, but they broke into their home, a home invasion, and shot and killed the father and daughter, 9-year-old daughter. These are the kinds of people that belong to these militia groups. These are the kinds of people, these gun-happy crazies that get involved in these Minutemen groups along the border. And anytime anybody agrees to round up a bunch of friends, and by the way, heavily armed friends, and help us all out. You better look out. That gives the crazies an excuse to come out of the woodwork and pretend they're doing something patriotic for all of us. Guard the border and keep them Mexicans out of this country. And they had their little guns and walking up and down the border and their little arm patches and their hats and everything. It's just like playing with toy soldiers. Only these people are well armed. No good could ever come of a group like this. And we're seeing now the some of the fruits of this movement. We've got vigilantes all over the Southwest. Pity anybody's seen walking across the desert down there without ID. You know, we wouldn't know what's going to happen to them. Legal or not, I don't care. A human being's a human being. And people should not be treated that way. Hugh Hewitt, who has called for a boycott of General Motors along with the drug junkie, Limbaugh, had a whole bunch of the discredited wingnut hacks on his show to discuss the situation in Iran this week. And the first one that was on was warmonger extraordinaire Michael Ledeen. And it was funny because Ledeen fought Tweeter. Tweeter was a great way to get information from Iran. Hewitt had to correct him about Twitter, but Ledeen later admitted that he doesn't watch TV news, so we can be pretty confident that Ledeen is just another clueless bloviator. And the second person on Hewitt's show was arch neocon Bill the Bloody Crystal. Crystal's already disgraced himself on Iraq, and now he's pretending, of course, to be an expert on Iran. The people in Iran were desperate for Obama to say something, he said. And the third act on this clown show was Frank Gaffney, the man who called President Obama our first Muslim president. I don't know if there's any crazier than Hugh Hewitt, and when you start talking about Michael Ledeen, Bill Kristol, and Frank Gaffney all in one show, oh my God, kind of scary. Kind of scary. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here in the program, 866-546-5254. I see John McCain has joined the fight about the Dave Letterman Palin fight, of all people. He said, I don't understand why Letterman would say that about a young woman. They deserve some kind of protection from being the butt of late night host. Of course, John McCain conveniently forgot what he said about Chelsea Clinton in 1998, and he told what he said was a joke. Why, and let me quote it, why is Chelsea Clinton so ugly? Because Janet Reno is her father. That's a quote from John McCain in 1998. It's better to not make jokes about the children of politicians, and also for the record, Dave apologized for his joke. McCain never did. He never did apologize to Chelsea or to Reno or to Hillary. I've heard he apologized to Bill, but really it should have gone to Reno and to Chelsea. And when you stop and think about it, it is kind of shocking, isn't it, that a guy would dump his crippled wife in favor of a young woman with family money, would make a tasteless joke and then condemn other people for doing the same thing? I'm just shocked. Just absolutely shocked. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Again, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we've got Youssef Munyar from the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, and we are going to talk at length about Netanyahu's speech. What a mess to be in, the Palestinian people. Here we've got a governor, a government that's willing to go along with just about anything Israel does. Just about anything. Makes me sad to even think about it. We're going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be right back. Power to the people. I hope that's where we get it eventually. We shall see. Let's give it a try right now to see if we can get our guest on the line. Calling in Washington, D.C., the very familiar 202.
Thank you for calling ADC. How may I help you?
Good afternoon. We are having a radio interview with Youssef. Is he in?
Yeah.
Thank you. We're waiting for Youssef Mouniar to come on the line. Hoping to have an interesting discussion about them. And that would be our guest right now. Youssef, is that you?
Hey there.
Hey.
Yes, it is.
Welcome to the Guy James Show. Youssef Mouniar. I know I ruined the last name, right?
That's okay. It's Mouniar.
Mouniar. Okay, maybe I'll remember that next time. Youssef, it's very good to have you as a representative of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, and we ask you on today because of the significance of the speech that Benjamin Netanyahu gave on Sunday. I know you probably have much to say about it. How did you feel in general about the speech?
Well, first let me say thanks for having me on. Look, it is significant because it really is a missed opportunity. unfortunately. A lot of people going into this weekend were waiting to hear what the Prime Minister had to say. We knew that Israel in February had elected an extremely right-wing coalition, which the Prime Minister chose to put together. We also knew coming into this weekend that the United States, led by President Obama and the entire international community and all 57 Arab and Muslim states, were supporting the creation of a Palestinian state, living side by side with Israel in peace and the implementation of a settlement based on international law. So that put the Prime Minister in a very difficult position. If he was going to say the word Palestinian state, he would get in trouble with his right-wing coalition at home. And if he would not say he endorsed a Palestinian state, he'd get in trouble with the President of the United States and the rest of the world. So in a very Clinton-esque fashion, the Prime Minister delivered a speech in which he redefined the entire meaning of the word state and said the Palestinians could govern themselves, but there would be so many restrictions on them that really whatever it is that they would create would not resemble a state in any way. The geography would be dismembered, settlements would continue to expand and would remain deep inside the West Bank. The state would have no sovereignty, it would be demilitarized, and so on and so forth. And on top of that, he insisted that, you know, Israel be recognized as a Jewish state, which lays the foundation for discrimination against the 1 million Arab citizens, Palestinian Arab citizens of Israel. So it's tragically a missed opportunity.
Well, as far as the settlements go, what's your position on the settlements? They use the excuse they need them for growth. Are you for freezing them, or are you for having them abandoned altogether?
Well, see, this is a really important question. I will tell you personally, as someone who happens to be Palestinian, Palestinian born inside of Israel. My grandfather had the experience of being removed from his home, and that was an experience which affected his life and the life of my parents tragically, along with the thousands of refugees that were forced out of their homes in 1948.
Can you tell us how he was removed from his home? Can you give us a little background on that story?
Sure, absolutely. He's from a town which is today inside of Israel. It's actually where the airport is in Israel. It's called Lod today, Al-Lid in Arabic. And that town in 1948 was besieged, and the residents were forced out by the newly formed Israeli army, Israeli state forces. They were forcibly removed. They were given about 10 minutes to pack up their bags and were told by, armed uniformed soldiers that, you know, you better not be here when we come back in a few minutes. And it was also the site of one of the most tragic massacres of the period in which 240-some-odd civilians hiding in a mosque were massacred inside a mosque. But that being said, that experience has given me the perspective that it is tragic to have anyone removed from their home. And as much as the presence of those settlements are illegal in every single way, I don't want to put any other human being through what my family and thousands of refugees have already been through. That being said, these settlements continue to take up Palestinian land and continue to be used as a method of control over the livelihood of Palestinians and have been the tool of an apartheid system in the West Bank. So when we talk about natural growth and settlement expansion, it really is an issue about good faith. If the two sides are going to sit down and talk to each other, they can't be doing that when the Israelis are continuing to expand settlements and take up Palestinian land. And I just want to say one thing about the natural growth issue, because this has suddenly become some sort of some sort of excuse within the discourse about settlement expansion. That's
not exactly a recent excuse, is it?
No, it's not, and it's been used for several administrations now to, you know, basically give the Israelis an opportunity to expand settlements. And, you know, we've seen a consistent increase in settlement expansion during the peace process. But here's the thing about natural growth. You know, no one is telling settlers to stop having babies. But, you know, if you want to stay in settlements, build high-rises. No one's telling you to stop having families. Stop taking land. That's the point. You know, if Gaza was allowed natural growth, there wouldn't be 4,000 people per square kilometer in Gaza. But in the largest Israeli settlement in the West Bank, there's only something like 670 people per square kilometer. The way in which these settlements are constructed, they're constructed in a way that they take up as much land as possible. And then the security perimeter around them takes up even more land. And then the roads around them, which have security perimeters, because the roads themselves are exclusively for Jewish citizens of Israel, take up even more land. So it's really growing into the West Bank in a very malignant way and gobbling up land and absolutely destroying the peace process.
Well, who officially owns this land now? When someone goes in a settlement like that, does the Israeli government own the land and then cede it to the people that are moving in?
It depends. When we talk about ownership, the actual ownership of much of the land is privately owned, and some of it is not privately owned, in which case it's state land. But the territory of the West Bank is internationally recognized as Palestinian and therefore not Israeli. And so whether or not the actual plot of land is privately owned or publicly owned, you know, really shouldn't make a difference. The bottom line is, Israelis should not be colonizing this land.
Well, we know that there is a movement, there is a group inside Israel that of Israelis that believes that the Palestinian believes that the Palestinian people are being oppressed and virtually captured in Gaza, surrounded with a looks like a prison and conditions even worse than many prisons. What is the general sentiment amongst the people in that area? How do you find the Palestinian people? And I guess what I'm saying is, how in the world do we keep the Palestinian people from being extremely angry over this? And is this a big deal with everyone?
Well, look, you know, for Palestinians, the occupation affects their daily life and has been affecting their daily life for generations now. We're talking about things as simple as waking up in the morning and going to school. You know, for most people, that's, a 10-minute walk or a 5-minute bus ride or what have you. You know, for the average Palestinian child, that may mean having to go through a checkpoint or squeezing in between barriers or walls or risking your life or, you know, confronting soldiers on a daily basis, what have you. The only way to kind of make sure that there's no anger among the population is to end the occupation. And unless there are tangible steps taken in that direction, it is very likely that the population is only going to lose more and more hope in a negotiated settlement.
Well, as far as negotiations now, Netanyahu has said that he would have negotiation, but what is left to actually negotiate? It seems to me as though he laid down a bunch of rules that left nothing on the table.
Right, and that's exactly the problem. It was a non-starter. What needs to happen now is that there needs to be mediation from the only party that can mediate in this situation, that's the United States, because only the United States will rein in Israel when it is not complying with its obligations. And that means direct, even-handed, and now it seems that it has to be forceful mediation on the hand of President Obama.
Can you give me an example of when you think the United States has reined in Israel on any issue?
Well, it hasn't happened often, and it hasn't happened to great extent, but there are a couple examples. You know, one was during the Reagan administration and the bombing of Lebanon, and then during the first Bush administration, George H.W. Bush, and his command to Shamir to end settlement expansion or face limited aid from the United States. And you know, that's something that he was willing to follow through with for a short period of time, but of course then it stopped. And even though settlement expansion stopped for a short period of time, once things went back to normal and relations got better, we saw a dramatic increase in settlement expansion during the height of the peace process, which was the greatest increase in settlement expansion since the beginning of the settlement enterprise. So without that sort of forceful American intervention, there's no incentive for the Israelis to stop taking Palestinian land.
Do you see any positive or negative future in this with Obama as president? How do you feel about the Obama administration? Are they willing to get deeply involved and lay down some rules for the Israelis to follow?
Well, I think this administration, first of all, is far better than the last administration in terms of engaging with this conflict. The president has started dealing with this issue from his first year as opposed to dealing with it in his last year as previous administrations have done. But that being said, this president has a lot on his plate. More than probably any president in recent history, this president is dealing with a series of crises that demand his attention abroad and at home. But it's clear that the discourse on this issue is changing, and it's going to take not only the president's intervention, but public support here for that intervention for him to have the political capital to do what he needs to do.
Well, I wish I could tell you I saw that I see a big public sentiment in this country for something to be done, but frankly, I don't. Do you?
Well, I wouldn't say it's this a significant outcry for action, but the discourse has changed, and people now are less likely to blindly support Israel as they have been in the past. And yes, that has changed. But as I said, that's an opening, and people who care deeply about this issue need to capitalize on that opening to continue this momentum and help the president do what he needs to do.
It seems as though parts of the Netanyahu speech were just completely unreasonable. They want to say that the Palestinians can have a state. But then again, they won't have any means to defend themselves, like almost every other sovereign nation on the globe. And with an arch enemy right next door, and no way to defend yourself, it seems like an odd situation to have put in front of you.
Right, and that's problematic, but it's not even the biggest issue. I mean, the demilitarization issue has been one that Palestinian negotiators have accepted, and it's one that could almost be can almost be considered a non-issue as long as they have strong security guarantees from the United States and from other players that would protect their sovereignty should the Israelis ever invade. But the best way for Israel to secure itself, to provide security for its own people, is to come to a just resolution with the Palestinians and their Arab neighbors. They could have a demilitarized state next to them, but unless they have justice and a true sense of justice with their neighbors, they're never going to have true calm and true peace. And they have that opportunity, and unfortunately their prime minister took a step away from that this weekend instead of a step forward.
And also asked them to give up the claims to Jerusalem as a holy spot for Islam. Is that going to be acceptable?
Palestinians have always held that Jerusalem is going to be the capital of the future Palestinian state that's created in the West Bank and in Gaza, in Arab East Jerusalem. You know, the Israeli prime minister, his party's charter clearly states that they would never stand for a divided Jerusalem and that Jerusalem is the eternal undivided capital of Israel. And he reiterated that in his speech. Again, that is a non-starter. To not be willing to compromise on Jerusalem is going to stop negotiations dead in their tracks.
Well, the speech, and I listened to it a couple of times, it sounded to me like, from my point of view, here you are, I'm making peace overtures towards you. And we will sit down and talk with you, and we will come to a consensus as long as you abide by all the rules that we put down. And that's exactly what it sounded like to me.
And you can see how that's problematic. If you want to make peace with somebody, the sort of the founding principle of peace negotiations is that you have to treat the other side at least as your equal, with equal respect, and to be dictating to them what they're going to do and how the outcome is going to be, and to put your security before theirs and your freedom before theirs is prejudging the negotiations before they even begin. So it's that sort of attitude that doesn't allow for an environment where peace talks can take place.
It surely does not, and also with staring down the barrel of a big gun doesn't help either. We know that the Israelis have a tremendous military force, are willing to use it, and it makes it difficult when they're dictating the terms to the Palestinians. This is what you're going to do, and you know, it just doesn't leave much room, I don't think. Well, Youssef, you had your banquet, what, Saturday night?
That's right.
I had talked about that earlier. It was sold out, and you had quite a nice affair, I hear.
That's right. We just had our annual convention. It's our 29th year, and we just had a very successful annual national convention. We had thousands of people participate, and it's the largest gathering of Arab Americans in Washington, D.C. annually.
And can you give us your website, please?
Absolutely. It's www.adc.org.
Okay, adc.org. All right. Youssef, I want to thank you very, very much for being on the program today. It's good to get some insight from the Palestinian point of view and the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee point of view. And we thank you so much for your expertise on this continuing problem.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I don't see how that people can negotiate down the barrel of a gun. I just don't. I watched Netanyahu's speech, and I know there are many people in this country that don't care one way or about that, but it's something that's been on my mind for a long, long time, I'm afraid. I'm sitting here today really reexamining my position on a few things that I've talked about on the show, and I don't have to tell you now that I'm not at all happy with some things I've seen and that I've experienced lately, and I'm really feeling let down by some people that I've strongly backed and defended against their political foes, only to see that those I've supported have in a sense betrayed my trust. And at times I almost think that I've been naive. I don't think of myself that way, but right now I'm not so sure. Perhaps I am naive. Perhaps I've been wearing rose-colored glasses in some of these cases. But honestly, those who know me, know me really well, would tell you I'm not prone to doing that. In fact, for most of my life, I've trusted very few, believed almost nothing that I couldn't prove for myself. and have been extremely skeptical of those who have made big promises. And usually, and probably unfortunately, I've been absolutely right in my beliefs. In fact, I've almost always been right about whom to trust and who not to. And I've always been, and all my friends would tell you this, I've always been a glass half-empty guy. I've always been a show-me, prove-it-to-me type guy. And that's just the way I've always been. And I've taken the word of many a people to their face. And then after they've gone, I've gone to great lengths to find out if what they told me is the truth. I believe this attitude has served me well. And for the few times I've been wrong, there have been a handful, well, not a handful, hell, there's been a hundredfold times that I've been right about who to trust and who to doubt. And I guess that's why I'm getting what I'm getting out of here. That's why I'm somewhat puzzled right now. I've not been the kind to take most politicians at their word. And I'm wary of what most of them say almost all the time because I've had occasion to have a few of them as friends. But for a couple of years, I've tried to change my feelings and build some trust in some of the political leaders that I really admire. And I want to believe them. And I want to think that they really cared about what's best for America. And I want to think that they really did care about ending our military involvement in the Middle East. And I wanted to think that they did want to do something about our woeful health care system in this country. And I really did think that a lot of them had wanted to seek justice for those who were guilty of what I consider egregious violations of our law and principles regarding war crimes and torture. But right now, I don't think I could go to Capitol Hill and find a, maybe even fill a 12-passenger van with politicians who are serious about going after Dick Cheney and George Bush and their friends who are obvious. It's obvious to all of us they're guilty of assaulting American values and standards of conduct. And most of them are all talk. And most of all, I'm disappointed in Barack Obama for not demanding that something be done to seek justice for these criminals. And I believe he's a fine man. I believe he wants to do what's best for this country. But I also believe that he's a true politician, and he doesn't want to ruffle too many feathers in that Beltway Club, that small circle that is the village of Washington, D.C., I think he should have come home from that speech in Cairo and gone on primetime TV and told the American public in a forceful way that, yes, he did apologize to some folks in the Middle East for some of the actions that we've taken against them, but now it's time for those who approve those actions to pay a price, no matter who they are. And it would make the world feel better about us, and it would show those in the political arena in this country that we will never again stand for the type of behavior that was routinely approved of during the Bush administration. And he, as our president, should see to it that examples are made of those who broke the law and in the harshest manner possible. And I'm also losing faith that anything meaningful is going to be done about the health care problems we face. The politicians will pass some sort of a watered-down, wimpy, milquetoast bill that's going to be all style and no substance, or as Dan Rather used to say, all hat and no cattle, you just wait and see. So that they can claim they faced up to the problem, that they've, you know, how that's, we fought for you. That's bull. That's BS. And it's not going to happen, period. Mark my words, the insurance industry and the healthcare providers for profit are going to flex their muscle, and they're going to get a bill that's heavily tilted in their favor. And we're going to continue to be overbilled, overcharged, undercovered, and we will not see much relief. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, Mr. and Mrs. Politician. Prove me wrong. And the wars, us out of Iraq, us making any real headway in Afghanistan, not going to happen. we'll be talking about being in Iraq 10 years from now. And we're always going to be told, oh, we're leaving soon. We have to be there. We have to be there to protect Israel. They're our allies in the region. And as a sideline here, does anybody want to tell me anything positive Israel's done for our country? Anything? 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 Hell, you know it and I know it. And it's got nothing to do with religion. We would back them if they nuked every other country in the Middle East. We'd find a way to spin it so that poor Israel had to nuke half a dozen countries to keep peace. Hell, we've caught how many of them spying on us? Spying on us. And we've still not done anything about it. Usually it just quietly gets swept under the rug. So I'm in one of those moods today. I'm not feeling good about the whole damn thing. I'm thinking it's not working out very well. No, sure, we Democrats, we lefties, we won the House, we won the Senate, we won the White House, and for sure it's better than losing them. But I guess my question is, by how much? Are we really looking at a situation, and I hate to say it, but are we looking at a situation where there's only two kinds of politicians, bad and worse? There are days when I feel that way. And today is most certainly one of those days. Change my mind, won't you? Change my mind. Am I too cynical? Am I a little too depressed over the whole situation? Am I being unwilling to see the silver lining on the clouds or the light at the end of the tunnel or any of those other proverbial statements you can come up with? Do I paint a black picture or something that's really not so black? Do I just imagine that this hatred that's going on in this country right now, is it just my imagination that it's worse now than it's been in my lifetime? I mean, I lived through the race riots in the 60s. And those were isolated incidents in certain areas of the country. But it seems like this hate has spread all over this land of ours right now. It's like a disease is spreading. And there are certain people helping to spread it. And I'd love to be able to do something about it. And I just don't seem to be able to get enough done about it. And it troubles me. Excitement today. This is a new Air America station going on in Washington, D.C. today. Everybody said, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. We're going to get even up some of the playing field. 3,500-watt station. Whoopee. 44 watts at night. In other words, at night, unless you live next door, you're not going to hear it. So, once again, you know, we're getting our asses kicked in the media. What's new about that, I guess? What's new about that? Yes, I'm in one of those moods today. Hopefully it'll change. We're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. You are listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. UAW workers walk off the job at a helicopter plant. Jesse Russell reports.
Workers represented by the United Auto Workers at a Bell Helicopter Textron Incorporated plant in Texas walked off the job on Monday. Nearly 2,500 workers are represented by the UAW at the plant, and they are on strike to protest a contract proposal that increases medical costs and would outsource work for janitors at the plant. If adopted, the contract could have cost 44 workers who handle janitorial duties at the plant their jobs. The workers voted 1,177 to 680 Sunday against the new contract proposal. However, the company says those janitors have received new job classifications with higher pay that would have prevented them from being eliminated. The contract would have provided a $4,500 bonus and 3% wage increases in 2010 and 2011. The company issued a statement saying they expect to continue negotiations until a satisfactory solution is reached.
Catholic Charities USA says unprecedented numbers of individuals and families are coming to their agencies nationwide for food, housing, and health care. Father Larry Snyder is president of Catholic Charities USA. He's calling on political officials at every level to make prudent decisions that will minimize adverse effects on those who have the least in our society. He says in many cases, governments at the state, county, and local levels are trying to balance their budgets on the backs of those who have the least. Father Snyder says the social safety net must be preserved and we must create an economy that benefits everyone.
And that's where we need to correct the system, to make sure that everyone is benefiting from our economic policies here. Ultimately, it's about building a nation where the American dream is still a reality and not just a myth.
The Boston Newspaper Guild said it planned to present an offer of resolution to Boston Globe management on Monday. The Globe imposed a 23% pay cut on Guild members Sunday. The Globe had said that the Monday meeting was intended to be limited to discussing how to implement the pay cut. The Globe says it needs $20 million in concessions from its unions to stay in business. Several other unions have already approved $10 million in concessions at the newspaper. Cessna Aircraft in Wichita is sending layoff notices Thursday to the first of 1,600 workers. In April, Cessna announced 2,300 layoffs. The latest job cuts bring the total layoffs to 6,900 since November, half of Cessna's workforce. Colorado grocery workers are finally voting on a new five-year contract. The King Soopers workers are voting now through Wednesday after weeks of disagreements over pensions, a new two-tier wage proposal, fewer benefits for new employees, and raises. The workers are represented by United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 7, and their previous contract expired on May 7th. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. No, I'm not in a better mood. I'm in the same mood I was before we went to the news. I'm disappointed. I'm double disappointed. And I hope you can talk me out of it. We've got coming up in just a very few minutes, so hold your calls. Dr. Carol Paris of the Physicians for Healthcare. She'll be an interesting guest. She's one of those that got arrested here a while back with one of the other guests that we had, Margaret Flowers, Dr. Margaret Flowers. The words of our president, and let me quote him. He said, "So I'm asking you to remember all that you gave over the last 2 years to get us here, all the time, resources, and faith you invested as a down payment to earn us our place at this crossroads in history. All that you've done has led up to this, and whether or not our country takes the next crucial step depends on what you do right now. Please donate whatever you can afford to support the campaign for real health care reform in 2009. It doesn't matter how much you can give as long as you give what you can. Millions of families on the brink are counting on us to do just that. I know we can deliver. Thank you so much for getting us this far, and thank you for standing up once again to take us the rest of the way. Sincerely, President Barack Obama. Can I ask a really stupid question here? Why do they need a bunch of money for this? Our president has access to every major news outlet that there is, maybe with the exception of Fox. And really and truly, as someone pointed out to me, he does have a lot of these people eating out of his hand. We've got MSNBC now working hard on this. ABC is doing a program on June 24th about the Obama health care reform. Really and truly, he's getting tens of millions of dollars of free PR from the mainstream media. What do we need donations for? We have the bully pulpit. Use it. Use it in a forceful way. I don't care if you want to go on every night and give a speech on TV. Someone will cover it on healthcare. We've got to educate people. And it just, I don't know, asking more money from people right after an election when things are tough seems a bit unseemly to me. It does. And we've got... workers facing the worst conditions since the Great Depression, and I think we'll talk about that a little later after the after our next guest. Let me. Are you facing worse conditions that you've had since the Great Depression? A lot of you. I mean, you haven't worked since the Great Depression, most of you. But are you having it tough on your job? Is your job, even though you still have one in many cases, is it tougher than it was before? Are you faced with more duties than you had before? Have people been laid off and you've had to assume their duties? Is everybody working twice as hard now for less money, wages being cut in many cases? I think that could be the case. I think we've got...
Good afternoon, doctor's office.
Good afternoon. Dr. Carol Paris, please.
Mask is calling?
Yes, this is Guy James from The Guy James Show. She has an interview at this time.
Okay, hold on just a moment.
See, you guys get in on everything here. We even got a little music in the background. I'm not sure that isn't... Who is it?
Hello?
Hello, Dr. Paris.
Yes.
This is Guy James from The Guy James Show.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Where am I? Where are you? Good afternoon for me.
You're in Maryland. I'm in Florida. So
oh, that's right.
We're both just past tea time.
Okay.
Did you have your tea this afternoon? I did not.
I did not either. I'm sorry to say. It just slipped by again.
Yes. I don't even have any crumpets. I wanted to thank you for being on the program this afternoon. That's a question I should ask my listeners. Do any of you know, do they still stop and take time for tea and crumpets in jolly old England at 4 o'clock? I don't know. Someone find that out. We've got Dr. Carol Paris with us this afternoon, and you're with the Physicians for Healthcare. Is that what it's called?
The name of the organization is PNHP, Physicians for a National Health Program, and we have a website, www.pnhp.org, which is a site that's full of information and opportunities to sign a petition in support of single-payer health care, lots of things.
Well, I know that you passionately believe in this issue, and I know that you've stood your ground for this issue. In fact, as we discussed, you were one that was arrested along with Dr. Margaret Flowers?
Yes, I was one of three physicians and a total of eight people. There were two lawyers and three other healthcare advocates who were arrested on May 5th, and another five, two more physicians three more physicians on May 12th. So there's a total of 13 people who so far have been arrested for nonviolent civil disobedience in support of single-payer health care reform.
My. Physicians getting arrested. Who would have thought it?
Yes.
At the insistence of one of our United States senators, I believe, Mr. Max Baucus. The reason, the main reason we wanted to have you on the program today, we talk very often, we talk every day about health care these days. I wanted to talk about the misconception about the AMA, that perception is everything, as you know. And I believe that this entire country almost has an absolute misperception of what the AMA stands for, its membership, and that whole business. Can you fill us in on that?
I'd be happy to, and I'm so glad that you're bringing that up. That, I actually wrote an op-ed piece that addresses this, and it's titled, "The AMA Does Not Represent Us," and it's us meaning the doctors who were arrested. The misconception is that the AMA speaks for all physicians, so that if you want to know what a doctor thinks, you can call the AMA and you'll have an idea of what the majority of physicians think on a particular subject. The fact of the matter is that the AMA only represents about 30% of America's doctors are actually members of the AMA, and of that 30%, only 15% are actually practicing physicians. The rest are retired. So the AMA really is not the body that speaks for all physicians. And that misconception is promulgated in the news every single day. I opened the Washington Post at 7:30 this morning, read an article about the president's address to the AMA, and the last paragraph said, the AMA represents 250,000 physicians and is the largest physician group in the United States. And while that's true, the implication is that it represents the majority of physicians, and it does not.
Tell me why doctors do not belong, as I understand it, what, two-thirds you're saying? Two-thirds do not belong to it?
Yes. Well, I'm sure there's many reasons, but I was looking at the New York Times letters to the editor, I think it was on Saturday of last week, and five letters to the editor were from physicians stating specifically that they are not members of the AMA and that the AMA does not represent their view on health care reform. So I think for many of us, it is simply that the AMA is a trade association, and while it has done and advocated some very good things, I'm certainly not out to vilify the AMA. They've done many good things. But right now, we are at a critical time in the healthcare reform debate. And I just want the American public to know that many, many physicians, in fact, the majority of physicians polled in numerous polls, support universal healthcare.
And half of the one-third of physicians that work that are signed up with the AMA, half of their membership is retired. Is that not true?
That is the statistic that I have, yes. The other important thing I think that the public should know is that the American Medical Student Association endorses universal health care reform, single payer. And those are the doctors of the future.
And so why is the AMA giving their stamp of approval, really non-approval, to this? They're not backing universal health care. Why is it? What is the reason given?
They are specifically not supporting single-payer health care option, And they're not even supporting a public option, at least not as it has been written into the current legislation. They are saying that they believe that that's going to result in doctors being forced to participate with an expanded Medicare program and that it will hurt. My understanding is that they're concerned about reimbursement.
So it comes down to money in some cases. And understandably, I understand people be concerned about money. Doctors have to fund their offices. They have to pay their employees, have to pay their health, they have to pay their insurance. I have seen the old, the legal issues dredged up again about
malpractice,
yes,
and defensive medicine. You know, I'd just like you to understand that all of those issues derail us from the most important two issues that I think the president has in mind. I don't think he's going about it in a positive way, but I think we all agree that we want everyone in the United States of America to have health care, to have access to health care, and that we want it to be at a price that's affordable and not break the federal bank. If we could get the Congress and the President to score the H.R. 676 universal health care single-payer bill that Congressman Conyers has already introduced into legislation, it would very clearly show that there is an affordable way to accomplish universal health care. But it's premised on jettisoning the private health insurance industry.
And that's what's raising ire of so many people.
Yes, it is.
You mentioned in your op-ed, which was just great, by the way, and we'll point toward that. This 60 people, this breaks my heart to even mention this. 60 people die every day in this country simply for lack of access to health care. 60 people. Now, if there was a plane crash every day that 60 people got killed in, it would be headline news all over the country. There isn't any question it would be. And yet, 60 people die for lack of access to health care every day, and there's really no mention of these 60 people.
Not a bit.
We're just not doing our job.
Well, I think that the American people, and certainly your listeners, can do a very valuable job if they simply educate themselves about all of the options in healthcare reform, including the ones that are being blacked out from the mainstream media, specifically H.R. 676, the single-payer option. So I think that's the first thing that listeners can do is educate themselves. You can go to the website, www.pnhp.org. There are many other good websites as well. And when you feel like you understand the issue, write to your congressmen, write to your senators, let them know that you support true health care reform and that you don't support a watered-down legislation that will amount to nothing more than a bailout for the private insurance industry.
That's what I'm worried about, a bailout for the private insurance industry and also a bailout for the politicians that will be able to come back and say, see, we fought hard for you. We got you a health care bill. Never mind that it doesn't amount to a hill of beans. We got it. And that's what I'm afraid of. I really am.
I agree with you, and I think that the spin doctors are going to be working overtime to convince the American people, once this legislation is passed, that something productive has happened, when in fact nothing good has happened and something very bad has happened. We've bailed out yet another industry, and the taxpayers' taxes will go up and their premiums will go up. They scored the CBO estimate of the Kennedy bill came out today. And they estimate the government's cost is going to be $1 trillion over the next 10 years, and the end result is that 36 million people will still be without insurance 10 years from now. And that's what they're going to masquerade as health care reform.
That's just not acceptable. It's just nowhere near acceptable. We cannot settle for that. We can't.
I think the American people understand that. I just don't think that they understand that they need to become involved and speak up on this issue. The American people are a generous people. I think the evidence of that is the outpouring of generosity after 9/11 and after Katrina. So I don't think it's a problem of lack of compassion on the part of Americans for their fellow citizens, because in fact I think many working Americans who have employer-sponsored health care, health insurance, realize that they are one job loss and one serious illness away from bankruptcy. A recent study was just done that shows that 62% of the bankruptcies in the United States in 2006 were because of medical debt. And 75% of those people had health insurance at the time that they became ill and ultimately ended up in bankruptcy.
What was the percentage?
62% of all bankruptcies are because of medical debt, and 3/4 of those people had health insurance when they became ill. So this isn't just the uninsured people that are going bankrupt. These are middle class citizens who have been responsible and carried health insurance their whole lives. But they get sick, they lose their job, they lose their employer sponsored health insurance, and they go bankrupt.
Well, it's a sad situation. It is a broken system. I know you've worked hard. You've put your skin in the game, so to speak, and really gone to bat for this. Were you treated all right?
The Capitol Police were absolutely wonderfully professional, and it was interesting. During the 5 hours that we were sitting on a bench handcuffed to the wall, you know, you have time to chat, and what we heard from these Capitol policemen were their own personal family tales of woe, of their family members and extended family members' problems accessing health insurance and going into debt because of medical bills.
Oh, my. Oh, my. That's depressing. That really
That's
is.
That's depressing. And you might also be interested to know that if you are in jail or in prison, you're entitled to health care. In fact, the Supreme Court has determined that it is cruel and inhuman punishment to deny a prisoner health care. So what I've been telling my patients who lose their jobs and lose their health insurance is that they ought to consider committing a nonviolent crime and going to jail, because then they would be able to have access to health care.
Excellent idea. Doctor, I want to thank you for being on the program, and I must say, you've come up with the quote of the day just a few seconds ago when you said, you know, when you're handcuffed to a bench in a jail, you have time to chat. I like that. That's good. Yeah, what a wonderful attitude about the whole thing. Well, give Dr. Flowers our regards, and
I will.
We want to reserve the right to check back in with you at some point when we're further down the road, because it's going to be a long road, evidently.
And well, it's going to be a long road, but it's going to happen very quickly. So
you think?
People should, oh, I think in the next 60 to 90 days, we could possibly end up with something that it will be terrible mess that we're going to have to live with for many years. So I encourage your listeners to pick up their pens, go to their computers, write, email, fax, and call your congressmen and your senators and tell them what you think.
Well, we exhort them to do that every day, and I thank you so much for your work on behalf of the people on this and your organization. Again, it's pnhp.org, right?
That's correct.
Dr. Carol Perez, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Have a nice afternoon.
What a nice lady, Dr. Carol Perez. Hard to believe she's a hardened criminal, huh? You know, if you're handcuffed to a bench and to jail for 5 hours, you have some time to chat. What an attitude. I wish I could have an attitude like that. They I'd have been in a straitjacket, and there'd have been trouble. I can guarantee you that. First of all, I'm claustrophobic. That would have done it right there. Oof. So, anyway. We're going to take a quick break after that and talk about health care here just for a moment or two, if I can find what it is I'm looking for, and I can't for some reason. I'm having quite a day here today. Here we go. We'll be right back.
Right now in Washington, Congress is working to fix health care. And as a doctor, I know what's most important is that you and I get to make decisions about your health care, not the insurance companies. That's why you should have a choice. Keep the insurance you have now, or join a new public health insurance plan with good benefits at a price you can afford. So we're no longer at the mercy of insurance companies making decisions you and I should be making together.
I thought that you were on. Congratulations. You finally did succeed. Congratulations. For leaving me in need. This morning I looked out my window and found a bluebird singing, but there was no one around. At night I lay alone in my bed with the image of you going around in my head. Congratulations.
Yes, the Traveling Wilburys. I, for some reason, can't get enough of their music lately. And some of you are saying, yeah, I know. Right now, just on a whim, I called a friend of mine, and I'm going to do that right this minute. And we dialed his number, and here we go. We're going to ring it. I think. Nothing happening. Well, let me just do it again here. I'll do it again. See what happens this time. Absolutely nothing. Well, I'm doing really well here. Got to give it another shot. You can hear the whole deal here. I know that. All right. Now, it says it's calling, but nothing is happening. Go figure. That's a strange one. Don't know that I've run into this before. Well, finally, we've got
hello there.
Our friend Rob on the line. Rob, welcome to the Guy James Show. Good to have you along with us this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Rob and I are acquainted, and we've belonged to the same club for quite a long time, I guess it is. And
correct.
Rob sent me, Rob is a well-known political activist, he's a Democrat, lives in one of the most red areas of the entire United States. And Rob sent me an email today telling me about the subject that I first brought to you in the first few minutes of the program today about the hate crime in Naples, Florida. And since that time, Rob, you've come across some more pictures of it, and you've actually seen pictures of it. Can you describe it to us, please?
Well, the pictures are posted on the Naples News website, naplesnews.com, and there are several pictures of swastikas painted on the double garage door of Ruth Dorfman, who lives in East Naples. And then there are at least two pictures of the things that are pasted to the door. One is a picture that has just a lot of animals on it. I'm not sure what that means. And there's a little tear out from a newspaper on there saying, "Does God hate?" And then next to it is written in big capital letters, "Yes." And next to that is written, "Gays, Jews, Democrats." So the message is, "Does God hate?" "Yes, gays, Jews, and Democrats." Then there's another one, which actually the background is the actual Naples Daily News op-ed column or commentary that Ruth Dorfman had written, I think, in this last Sunday's paper about the PFLAG convocation, PFLAG being Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. It was a very joyous religious convocation held a few Sundays ago at Unity Church. That's not the Unitarian Church, but Unity Church here in Naples. Anyway, that article is pasted on the door, and over it is pasted other cutout words, "Relentless threat of gay sin." So it's obviously a hate crime kind of thing, very much in the same vein as we're seeing with hate crimes around the country. The murder of the three policemen in Pittsburgh back in April, the cementing closed of the Planned Parenthood clinic doors at the very end of April or early May, I'm not sure the date, here in Planned Parenthood, the killing of the abortion doctor in Kansas, Dr. Tiller, the murder of the officer Stephen Johns, who was at the National Holocaust Museum. And all of this is just sort of getting really kind of scary because these nut people are doing these terrible things.
Yeah, this wasn't a couple of kids with a spray can, was it? This was a more deliberate, a well-thought-out crime.
Well, it's hard to say. I don't know. I imagine the police are investigating it, and maybe they'll find out who perpetrated this. But whether it was kids or adults, who knows? Nobody seems to have any information that I know of yet.
But whoever did it thought it out with the cutouts and the pasting and all that. It wasn't just a spur-of-the-moment thing.
It couldn't have been spur-of-the-moment. It had to be thought out because the words that were like gay, Jew, and Democrats were cut out of the paper. They weren't written or anything. They were and pasted on. So, yes, this had to be planned.
Well, you know, Rob, this is scary, and it's very troublesome. We don't live in a big community here. Naples is not that big of a community. We think sometimes that we're possibly isolated from things like this that we read in Washington or in Pittsburgh or in Kansas City. But we're not, are we? It's pervasive, and it's everywhere.
This kind of hate, this kind of perverse discrimination, this kind of unacceptance of other people is deep in our country, unfortunately. I mean, there are other good things that are deep in our country, but this is deep in our country everywhere, small towns, big cities, it doesn't matter. It's everywhere.
I don't know if you saw that map recently of militia hate organizations, but in Florida, a couple of them right here, closer to where I live than where you live, in Fort Myers, Florida.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, there was a map of the organizations that are being watched around the country in relation to, it was in relation to the killing at the Holocaust Museum. And you could point to the map and single out Florida, and it showed which groups are where, and there are a couple of them right in Fort Myers, Florida.
Uh-huh.
So,
I can believe it.
Yeah, I can too. And now we have evidence that hate is alive and well in our neighborhood too, and it's very, very sad. Rob, what I mean, I know you write a lot of op-eds or to the paper, a lot of letters to the editor, the paper, and all that. What can you say about this? And you know, you live in a very right wing neighborhood, even more than mine. I'm just up the road, about probably 15 miles from you, but you're in one county and I'm in Lee County. But still, it's heavily right wing, heavily Republican. We're just seeing a great deal of resentment now towards our new president, not giving him a chance and all. Do you think he's going to get the time that he needs to do what it is that he needs to do?
Well, first of all, in terms of this kind of thing, it seems to me that there are at least three different things that we need to do. First of all, we have to recognize that we're all complicit in this. Those of us that don't speak out enough, those of us that don't do enough to combat this kind of horrendous nastiness, this horrendous vandalism and hate and murder, we have to do that. If we don't speak out enough, we're complicit. Secondly, it seems to me that we have to make sure that action is taken, strong action is taken to eradicate this. You can't just try to say, oh, well, these people that did this, if they're, you know, assuming they're caught, we'll educate them. They can't do it again. We have to be very hard on it. And thirdly, I think we have to insist that the Republicans and the conservative, responsible, conservatives, the Republicans, the people who are law abiding, and I imagine most Republicans are that, they have to start speaking out against this more and more, so that we don't have Fox News sort of giving cover to these kinds of horrific acts. Obama and his people know all about this stuff. The Secret Service is certainly up on all this stuff. So I think they'll forge ahead, and there'll be enough good that comes out of what they're trying to do in Washington. There'll be enough good that comes out of it so that maybe it will overcome a lot of this nastiness and hate.
Well, we hope and pray that's the case. Rob, thanks so much for coming on and explaining this to you. Let me ask you one more thing here.
Sure.
I haven't seen, I did see the pictures that you sent. Was this headlines in the Naples paper?
No, the vandalism happened last night. So in the Naples paper this morning, there was nothing about it. It only came on the Internet, and it's only on naplesnews.com. Now, I have no idea what will be, but I'm pretty certain there will be some kind of news about it in the Naples Daily News that's printed tonight and delivered tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it should be a front-page story, I should hope.
I should hope so, yeah. I hope they don't bury it somewhere. But I would think it would be front page, yeah.
Rob, thanks so much for taking time out to
talk right,
with
guy.
Us this afternoon. I appreciate it very much.
Nice to talk with you. Good luck.
Yes. Rob Winslow from Naples, Florida. Good to have him with us this afternoon. He lives in the belly of the beast there, I call it. Naples, Florida, probably as hardcore right-wing as you're going to get. And this hate crime taking place just last night, so it did miss the paper today. I don't know what to think. I don't know where we're headed. I mean, we see these kinds of things, but if you'd see this picture of a rather exotic hate crime, if you ask me, carefully cutting out this big photo or big painting and gluing it up, and then with the cutouts that were put on it, Democrats and Jews and gays, does God hate and all this. This took some time to do. And disgust me. Just disgust me that somebody would do this sort of thing. We've talked a lot about health care today, and, you know, we've got our old nemesis. And I didn't mean old. John McCain. He's back talking about health care, and John McCain is saying that Americans rank it at the top in health care in the country. When you know, why go speak out against about something like this when you don't know what you're talking about? When you're a United States senator, he says, I don't think there's any doubt about it. Over time, you'll drive them all out, and the competition, and the idea that somehow the government can administer health care in a more efficient fashion than the private sector, I think, flies in the face of examples of other countries that have done so. What a myth that is. What a myth, and he's perpetuating that myth. You can't tell me that he's not intentionally perpetuating that myth, because here are the facts about the government administering health care as opposed to the private sector. Compared with five other nations, Australia, Canada, Germany, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, the United States health care system ranks last or next to last on five dimensions of a high-performance health system: quality, access, efficiency, equity, and healthy lives. Last or next to last on all of those. On indicators of efficiency, the U.S. ranks last amongst the six countries, with the U.K. and New Zealand ranking first and second. The U.S. has poor performance on measures of national health expenditures and administrative costs, as well on the measures of the use of information technology and in multidisciplinary teams. Also, of sicker respondents who visited the emergency rooms, those in Germany and New Zealand are less likely to have done so for a condition that could have been treated by a regular doctor had one been available. And you don't even have to look abroad. The government-run Veterans Administration, the good old VA healthcare system, is the most effective healthcare system available in this country. Not just on results, but on cost as well. So, John McCain, a veteran yourself who no doubt has availed himself of the VA medical care sometime in his life, doesn't even know, as a United States Senator, that the VA, the government-run VA healthcare system, is the most effective healthcare system available, not just on results, as I said, but on cost efficiency as well. And think about this in a measure of the VA's medical efficiencies. Veterans enrolled in its healthcare system are, as a group, far older, sicker, poorer, and more prone to mental illness, homelessness, and substance abuse than the population as a whole. In other words, they've got the worst kind of patients in terms of their health, physical and mental health, the worst kind of patients you could have. Yet the VA's average expenditure per patient in 2004 was $5,562, including prescription drug and longer-term care benefits that have long been available to VA patients. And by comparison, Americans as a whole, including children and those who never saw a doctor during the year, consumed an average of $6,260 in health care dollars in 2004. Now, you tell me if that isn't saying that things are about as broken as they can get. And here we have a United States Senator, an influential United States Senator, by the way, standing up for the health insurance companies and saying that we don't want them to have unfair competition. My God, what's unfair? What's unfair? Why? That's so wrong. So very, very wrong. And it bothers me when our senators are either A, uninformed and don't know the truth about these matters and haven't taken the time to find out, or B, telling malicious lies for campaign contributions. Which is it? Either way, it's not good. Ignorance, very bad for United States senators to talk about health care and complicity and raping the American public of their money. On the other side, another bad choice. So, John McCain, you lose on this one, as usual. And I'm so glad we had Dr. Carol Paris on to tell us about the American Medical Association. I don't have a bone to pick with them either. It is a fact that the American Medical Association is against a public health care option, and that's their choice. But without a doubt, I bet you 90% of the people in this country believe that the AMA speaks for the vast majority of physicians. And as we were told today, and as we can tell by finding out the facts and figures, that it only speaks for about one-sixth of active physicians in this country. So the AMA is not the spokesman. Not the spokesman for health care in this country. Not the spokesman for the great majority of physicians in this country. Keep that in mind and tell all your friends. It is up to you. It is up to me to find out the facts and spread them around. No one's ever been hurt by the facts, you know. Lies hurt people something terrible. It's like the one that McCain told, or it was either a lie or ignorance, like I mentioned. Oh, it's going to take a long time to get this straightened out. I do not agree with Dr. Paris that we'll have something done in 30 to 90 days. I think it may take longer. If they do this in haste and shove something through just to get anything through, a bill, we want a bill, we want any kind of a bill, just get something through there. If we end up with another one of those, and the thing is, Obama's right. President Obama's absolutely right. We are at the precipice. We are at a time when something can be done about this. The nation is ready to have something done about this. And now's the time to act. We have people's awareness heightened. You've helped heighten people's awareness. Can't talk today. And I have as well. And we've got to keep hammering on this issue. We've got to keep writing our Congress critters, phoning them. Get yourself completely educated. I just this past weekend ran across somebody who didn't know the proverbial S from Shinola and was spouting off about health care. And I sat him down and I set him straight. And by the time the conversation was over with, we had a convert. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know this. Oh, I never heard that. Oh, and you will hear that too. Get yourself educated on these issues. Go to PNHP.org, PNHP.org. Read all you can. Help out in this effort. Because something has to be done. This is the worst problem we face. Is something that's going to get worse and worse and worse. It's going to be magnified many times over in the years to come if we don't do something decisive about it right now. And I don't apologize for harping on this issue. Maybe it's not interesting to some people. I do not apologize for harping on this issue because it is a major, major, major problem in this country. And I will tell you this, I do feel that this country cannot go on the way it is right now with our healthcare system. Cannot go on the way it is. It will break us. It will absolutely financially break us. And it'll also kill our health as well. Fewer and fewer people able to get decent healthcare in this country. So it's got to be available. It's got to be affordable. It's got to be comprehensive. It's got to be something that we can live with. It's got to be something the rich and poor alike can live with. It's got to be something, I guess, if you want to have your private plan, why, go for it. Right on. But if there's a good public plan available, we need to all have access to that as well. You can't tell me that we can't cut costs by at least a third or more. In fact, most surveys show that we can cut costs by at least a third. Efficiency's got to be number one, and availability got to be right in there as well. 60 people a day, folks. 60 people a day dying because they didn't have access to health care. Imagine a big room filled with 60 people needlessly dying because they couldn't get health care. That's an abomination in this country. That's something you wouldn't expect of the United States of America. That's something other people in other countries wouldn't believe is happening here in this country. So do something about it, please. Like I said, I know all of you are knowledgeable. Find out all you can. Talk to your friends. Talk to your relatives. Urge everybody you know to call and write your congressmen, your senators, and let them know how we feel about this. Let them know how America feels. Let them know their jobs are on the line. They do worry about that. I want to thank you for joining us here today on the Guy James Show. Please do remember we're a listener-supported show. You can help out by going to theguyjamesshow.com. Thanks to all of our guests, to Dr. Paris, to Youssef, and to Rob. See you tomorrow, gang.